Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. The pleasure today of speaking to you with Paul Benassi, who is a forensic psychiatry fellow in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Toronto, where he's also on staff at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. Paul and his colleagues have a paper entitled The Role of Morbidity and Mortality Rounds in Medical Education, a scoping review, coming out in the May 2017 issue of Medical Education, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to speak with him about that article. Paul, thanks for making the time. I know it's been a particularly busy month for you.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Morbidity and mortality rounds is a phrase that's very familiar to anyone working near the medical profession in North America. I frankly don't know if it's a phrase that's used around the world, so I probably need to start by just asking you to clarify what are those rounds and what are the purposes that you see in the various experiences that you've had with them.
Certainly. So I think morbidity and mortality rounds have a long tradition in medicine. And basically, there are these forums where people in healthcare can get together and reflect on patients that they provided care for and look at, you know, were there things that kind of went wrong or things that could be improved, and hopefully discuss these things in order to hopefully improve the way they provide care or change the way they practice. And so these kind of have been part of the system. You see it at hospitals, and you even seen it how they train physicians. And they've typically focused, at least traditionally, mostly looking at like individuals or how individuals provided care, and not really at the overall system of that care is getting provided in.
Is it fair to say that they're typically department-specific and case-specific? For anyone who hasn't experienced these things, can you elaborate a bit on how they would typically function?
Yeah, so a typical example would be, like you said, a department, so maybe a surgical department or an internal medicine department, and they would invite people who work in that department, so other physicians, medical learners, sometimes they'll invite nurses and pharmacists and other people in medicine, and typically they'll find, you know, an interesting case or something what they'll call like a teaching case, someone that had something interesting happen or maybe an error happen. And they'll review some of the information around there. So how they came in, you know, what kind of symptoms they had, maybe what medications, what treatment were provided, and also talk about kind of what happened to that patient. And then people would hopefully have a discussion about, you know, thinking about different diagnoses. It could be about a way of sharing medical knowledge, so talking about recent treatment guidelines, and also a way of kind of looking at where maybe a mistake or error could have occurred in the care. And so I think the challenge with some of these M&M rounds we found was that what the objective was and what the goal was really varied amongst programs. So even though you have a department and to review error, what the end goal of reviewing that error often varied between departments.
Well, and some of those goals I imagine are genuine around quality improvement for the system and how to make everybody better. My limited experience with these things leads me to believe that it can often be quite sensitive conversations for any number of reasons, one of which being the, you know, potential risk or threat that the person presenting the case might feel, again, as a way of helping others understand what might typically happen. How are these things typically used within the Department of Psychiatry where this work was started?
So this is an interesting point. The paper actually came out of a discussion we had at the Department of Psych that we don't actually do a lot of morbidity and mortality rounds in psychiatry here. And when I looked at the literature, it kind of reflected that within psychiatry, it has not been as common practice as you'll see in other specialties, other medical specialties. And we're kind of wondering, A, why, and B, if we wanted to do M&M rounds in psychiatry, what can we learn about best practices or what works best or how are these things designed? And that really was the driving factor for even doing this review of M&M rounds across programs. So actually, we didn't really do it. And then we kind of wanted to learn about it so that we could maybe do it.
Right. Oh, excellent. Okay, so this was actually trying to translate what's been commonplace for decades in many other places into a new context. And interesting that that was required even to spur some reflection on, are these things value added?
Yeah, and I think to your second point about how are these things usually done, because they can be kind of stressful environments, the literature really shows that traditionally it really focused on individuals. So looking at where did someone go wrong, which then obviously can get into a little bit of a blame game amongst care providers, which you can imagine would make people, especially if there's any kind of power differential, if you're a young medical learner and your department surgical chair, it can make it hard to share or feel safe to kind of admit wrongdoings or admit a lack of knowledge. And so I think an emerging trend I saw in the literature about more contemporary M&M rounds is really focusing on system-based thinking, which means thinking about all the different players that are involved in one's care. So thinking organization policies, thinking about the actual clinical team, thinking about, you know, was it a busy day on the unit or was it kind of slow day? And then also looking at the individual, but taking a larger scope. And people have at least described it as feeling less kind of confrontational and blaming because you're looking at a whole system. It's not just one individual that provides care.
And that fits well with the notion of the scoping review that you've adopted, and it does seem from the paper that you've delved into this to try to understand what works, what doesn't, why it might be having an influence, and really breaking down the components of these rounds. What were some of the variables that you found yourself needing to consider as you examined the heterogeneity with which these things have been implemented?
Yeah, so I think there was kind of two parts. We wanted to understand, how are these rounds actually designed and implemented? Like, what are the formats? What tools may they be using? And then also understanding, are people actually evaluating the effectiveness? Are they even looking at the outcomes of M&M rounds to see what they're doing? Is it worth the time and the investment needed to do these kind of activities? I think in both areas, you'll see, we found that there's lots of variability. People are doing many different things in the way they design it and format them. And a lot of the literature around it is kind of describing their program, and there's less focus on evaluating outcomes, but there is some evidence for different things. One of the ways we used to evaluate the outcomes was using Donald Moore's continuing medical education framework. So he just has this framework of varying levels of outcomes you could look at for any educational activity, starting at participation all the way to patient health outcomes, which would be the highest. Mm-hmm. And we saw that from the M&M rounds, most of them looked at mostly participant satisfaction and then maybe a little bit of knowledge or at least kind of subjective self-reported knowledge about how to review a critical incident or being aware of the different system players. But there's still lots of work to be done around, you know, are these things achieving the educational and the quality improvement type goals? From the literature, we can see that there are some programs or designs that seem to have a little bit more likelihood to lead to quality improvement, at least. And so some of that stuff was around, you know, these formats having more of a formal structure, so having set agenda, having someone that has a little bit of training or knowledge in how to guide an incident analysis, moderating the group, and also having really clear objectives of what the program or the forum hopes to attend. So is it mostly about medical education? Is it to kind of think about quality improvement initiatives? And on the later end, if you want it to lead to quality improvement, having things in place where you actually give time to think and brainstorm about change ideas and having a dynamic relationship with people within the organization that actually could help move forward some of those change ideas and having kind of a feedback loop, which then talks to the complexity. We found some could be super simple where it's just a teaching session with no real kind of stated outcome to something much more complex that's very much integrated with the hospital organization.
Right. I imagine that one of the most beneficial outcomes of this sort of thing might be the signals it sends to various stakeholders, members of the department, as to how important it is to continue to reflect on some sort of continuous quality improvement activity. Did that come out of the review at all, or was it really so focused on the outcomes at the individual level that the influence on the broader culture just hasn't been explored sufficiently?
Yeah, I would say there is a little bit of an emerging theme and more recent work showing that there's a focus at the medical training level and also at the organizational level, thinking about systems and system-based level of care and thinking about constant improvement in quality and patient safety. And actually that being kind of a core competency or skill by itself. So I think traditionally you think of a core competency might be professionalism, communication, you know, medical knowledge or expertise. And there is this growing theme, I think, in North America and even across the world around, you know, also being aware of quality improvement and being a participant in that process. And you can see that in Canada and the U.S., where a lot of the accredited bodies that do training for medical trainees have included some form of quality improvement skill set as a core competency in the training programs. And you can see more legislation around hospitals having to do quality improvement. So I think these are actually some of the drivers for the changing objectives that we're seeing in M&M rounds.
And so did you decide as a department that you were going to implement these, or what has happened locally as a result of this effort?
Yeah, so I think the challenging thing is that these can be, Toronto at least has multiple different hospitals which have, you know, different cultures, different needs, and different setups. So it can be challenging to have department-wide M&M rounds, I think, in that context. Mm-hmm. What we have seen is that individual hospitals have worked with the department to understand how they could implement it on a smaller scale within individual departments at their sites. And I think it's kind of a growing process of people figuring out what they hope to achieve right. through these M&M rounds, because that really changes how complex and how much resources and time are devoted to them. So I think it's kind of an interesting thing, because I think also people have a lot of experiences going through M&M rounds when they were in different specialties in medical school and surgery and internal medicine, and trying to figure out how that would look like in psychiatry.
I think you just alluded to an answer to my next question, which is if you started imagining how you might need to adapt what you've read from this literature to the specifics of your situation in psychiatry, do you have any recommendations for our listeners as to how you might start thinking through that process and determining if and how you were to implement MMR rounds, how you would try to make them the best fit for your local climate?
Mm-hmm. We did try to think of, from the literature, other things or themes that we can draw on in designing more, it's hard to say evidence-based because it's a scoping review, but kind of things that have maybe some support or at least some backing. You know, I think one major theme was, and this kind of goes back to my point of thinking about what the objective of the activity is. So is it going to focus on clinical knowledge, or is it also going to look at developing skills in applying system improvement principles to lead to different changes or safety efforts? Because that will gear how you might measure outcomes, but also how you might design it. I think kind of more broad general ones is having a structure, using some way or some formalized tool to actually look at events that promote you to look at systems level. So it kind of gets away just from the individual level. So that might be, you know, things that prompt you to think about team dynamics, think about equipment and technology, think about hospital policies, think about patient factors, so that these things are kind of prompted and people think about all these different contributing things when reviewing a case. And then I think another one, if you're going to go towards quality improvement, is really having some form of partnership with people within the organization that have skills in quality improvement, or at least kind of more senior leadership, so that ideas or change ideas that are brought up in M&M rounds can be communicated and hopefully can lead to changes. Because some people in the literature actually noted that, you know, if they keep going to these rounds and keep bringing up the same issue or the same problem, and they don't feel that there has been movement in it, there hasn't been changes, then it can sometimes feel demoralizing, as in, like, we're putting all this time into this and I'm not seeing changes. So I think that's also an important thing to keep people motivated and engaged in the activity, to feel like it actually is contributing, if that's one of your goals.
Sounds like very sound advice, and just in your answer you can hear the complexity of these things and the importance of being deliberate and thinking carefully about how these things might get implemented, rather than trusting that one size fits all or that mortality morbidity rounds even means the same thing to every individual who might use the title. So I think that's actually a good place for us to wrap up, because it's a good lead to further details in the paper. And so I'll end by congratulating you on, again, shining a light where I think in a lot of places we just assume that because these rounds have taken place forever that they're important things that need to continue. In signing off, I'll remind our listeners that we've been talking about write a paper titled The Role of Morbidity and Mortality Rounds in Medical Education, a Scoping Review. It'll be released in the May 2017 issue of Medical Education, and I've been speaking with the first author of that work, Paul Benassi. Thanks again, Paul, and look forward to hearing where this leads.
Thanks very much for your time. Take care.